You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 1.
Good afternoon. This is Overdrive. I'm Dave Naylor, hosting for this one and only day. Dave Coolin is here as my co-host. We're going to have some guests join us in studio. Scott Mitchell, TSN Blue Jays reporter, will join us at 5 o'clock. Jennifer Hedger, SportsCenter anchor, will be here at 6. Henry Burris from the CFL and TSN.
It's a pretty esteemed group you have coming in here, Mr. Naylor.
I'm going to take over the show and make it all football today.
Tell you what.
I'm going to do that.
Dave Naylor's hosting. Get the bigs in here.
Well, you know, it's the middle of summer. This is, I think, August 15th. We are, by definition, kind of the dog days of August, right?
This is it.
And if so, of course, we're going to be talking hockey.
Well, it's just starting to heat up a little bit.
Just starting to heat up.
The angst is starting to creep in. It is. It's getting a little bit closer. And there are so many unsigned RFAs. It is such a big topic that it's funny because people have been seeing me since July 1st. And the question I've asked absolutely answer the most is what's going to happen with Mitch Marner. Of course, I have no answer. But I have told people I have a suit in my car. It's a summer suit.
Just in case.
Last year, it was a summer suit for William Nylander.
Right.
Turned into a fall suit.
Right.
Finally, it was a nice winter suit that I had on the day he signed. Let's hope that's not the case. In fact, I was out today, and I was in a shop, and I walked in, and the guy behind the counter said, "You got the suit with you?" I said, "I've got the suit with me. I absolutely have the suit with me." And he laughed, because I had a baseball hat on and a pair of shorts and flip-flops.
That is the nature of a story that, and you saw this in a more limited window in the Kawhi Leonard story in the spring. Like, everybody was afraid to turn off their phones, go to sleep, you know, because it's like Kawhi might announce he's staying or going, and then, of course, he does it in the middle of the night.
Well, the night he signed, that Friday, Hayes and I were working, and we had Josh in here, we had Leo in here, and they're all suits and ties, and they were all the whole cast of characters. What we didn't know is it was going to come at 2 in the morning,
right,
or 3 in the morning, Friday night, Saturday morning. So that crew was on call. And then the Vegas thing was heating up with the summer league, right? So
right.
Some people had flipped out to Vegas because everyone was going to be there and all the prominents were going to be there, all the GMs were going to be there. So that was quite a chase.
That was. Well, let's dive in. I've got to show you something before we dive into this. I just brought this in. A little bit of show and tell today.
Great.
So I don't own many things in the world that I think there's only one of, but I believe I have one here.
I was looking at that from a distance, trying to figure out what it was.
That is a 1971 Bernie Parent Maple Leaf coffee mug.
Okay, that is a collector's item.
It has to be.
And I see Bernard Marcel Parent quite a bit.
The blue from his uniform has been erased by the dishwasher.
That is
but
brilliant.
But everything else is intact.
I have this in my home office,
and I thought, I'm going to bring this in and show this to Pooley, because I
think
he'll be impressed.
I just saw Bernie about 3 weeks ago down in Philly. He's doing great. He actually got in a bad car accident during last year. And I believe it was hip surgery he had. So pretty significant. But he's moving around and doing great. And I love it, David, because the French accent is more prominent now
than it was
after 35, 40 plus years of living in Philadelphia.
How does
it get more prominent?
It's not like Mario Lemieux, where it, like, disappeared.
It's gone.
Gone, yeah.
It's gone. But
you must be talking on the phone to back home.
Oh, no, it's not. It just becomes, it's charming.
It's charming.
It's part of his shtick. And it keeps getting deeper. I just laugh at it.
How many people listening to the radio right now had no idea Bernie Parent played for the Maple Leafs?
Boy, so I think that was a trade or a waiver deal.
It would have been before free agency.
Like, he was originally a Boston Bruin.
Okay.
And
he was a Leaf like 70, 71, something like that.
But he was a Flyer, then a Leaf, then a Flyer.
A Flyer again?
I believe
remember
so.
That.
Yeah, I'll look that up.
You know, I threw this thing up on Twitter one time, like a couple years ago, when I came across it in my basement or something for the first time in ages. And I took a picture of it and said, you know, not many of these around. And among the likes I got on Twitter, Bernie Parent.
That's great.
He's pretty prominent on social media right now. That's where Twitter is really neat. You know, like, we talk, you know, kind of what a cesspool it can be and things like this. And I had an experience last week where Mark and Michelle, the Philadelphia Eagles, had a 75-yard touchdown in their first preseason game last week. He played in Calgary last year. His brother is Sony Michelle, the running back for the Patriots.
Right.
And when he got the touchdown, I tweeted out, Markin told me that when he came out of college and his NFL opportunities dried up the first time, his cousin, without telling him, emailed every team in Canada, like, vouching for his for his cousin and that they should take. They found out Calgary had his rights. He becomes a Stampeder and such. So I threw that out on Twitter. About 48 hours later, I get a reply from the cousin.
How great.
Like,
that?
Somehow it got to him, right? Like, in great. The Twitterverse, it's like, and the guy goes, yeah, I'd really like to thank, you know, Danny McManus in Winnipeg, who answered all my questions and did stuff he didn't have to do for me. And I'm looking at it, and I'm like, my God, there's the cousin.
This is the guy.
This is the guy. Yeah. Like, I had no idea who he was.
It's fascinating to me on Twitter, on Instagram, the pictures that people send me from my past. It's unbelievable. I played 16 games in Portland, Maine, and people will send me pictures of me in uniform. In Portland, Maine. Pictures surface of me from Europe in 1982. There was a college picture last week of myself, another co-captain, and Lefty Smith, the esteemed longtime coach at Notre Dame. And it's just so funny how this stuff surfaces. The bizarre pictures that I get sent to me from the past, they're pretty cool.
See, they've always existed. There was just nowhere for them to surface.
Yeah, there was no forum.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but the old-fashioned mail system, I will say, probably average 3 to 5 envelopes a week.
You do?
I do.
Still?
Yeah.
When did you last play in the NHL?
I retired in 1995.
That's amazing.
And they find you. Now they come to the TSN office
right.
for the most part.
Sure, yeah.
But they'll also show up. I have 3 daughters, and the daughters were living in Philadelphia, Boston, and Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
They'll show up at the Chicago address.
No,
it's
kidding.
Unbelievable. So, wow. However, the address gets tied in, maybe through her professional field that shows up somewhere in some database, and it's really comical. And so, they come in a self-addressed stamped envelope. I sign the cards and send them back.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
That's remarkable that the staying power that has, like nearly a quarter of a century later.
It is.
You'll probably be getting them all your life.
It is. You know what? And a lot of it now. Is my dad collected cards and yep. he passed them on to me, and it's a great connection for us. And, you know, there's a great way we stay connected, a great sure. conversation piece for us. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. The internet is amazing in what it can do from a positive standpoint.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but Bernie is doing very well. He's big in social media, actually. So I would follow probably at Bernie Perrant and very much on inspirational messages and. Power positive thinking, and he does speak, you know, to corporations and stuff. And he had gone through some significant struggles. And to Ed Snyder's credit, Ed Snyder was never going to see one of his former players.
You really took care of them. I think you were a Flyer, one of his, eh?
Unbelievable, Dave. Yeah. Like no other.
Wow.
And, you know, Ed passed away a couple years ago, mm-hmm. and the common strand in that Flyers organization in the orange and black was Ed Snyder. I mean, 48.
One owner, right? Like
one
from
owner.
Day one.
From day one.
With a 1967, 68 expansion team? Yeah. Because, mm-hmm. You know, I'm born in 67. So when the Flyers won in 75 and 76, like I'm 8, 9 years old.
Right in your wheelhouse.
Yeah. It's bigger than anything you could have ever experienced,
sure.
right? And
sure.
I have pictures of me standing next to the television set while Bobby Clark's over my right shoulder with no teeth and the Stanley Cup in his hand that my grandfather took. You know, things like that you yeah. just never, ever forget.
That's so good. And
to this day, I could probably do the roster.
Ed had ebbs and flows to his involvement, depending on where he was in his own personal life. And he would be involved, and you could see the team ebbing and flowing with him over the 48-plus yeah. years that he yeah. was involved. And it was the one common strand, and it'll be interesting to see if the Flyers can maintain it. Now, Paul Holmgren mm-hmm. has recently stepped down as president.
Right.
Ron Hextall, of course, out as general manager. So some of the strands to the past, Bobby Clark's still there in a senior vice president role, although pretty hands-off. But it's amazing how they've kept it going.
Mm-hmm.
In that aspect, largely because of that owner.
And a lot of guys who played, especially in those glory days, stayed there, right? Stayed
almost the entire
yeah.
team.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was down 3 weeks ago for a golf outing, and they're really working hard to get young alumni involved, and
right.
there were young alumni that came,
mm-hmm.
That had came to event for the first time. They'd come to the golf outing. But during the 50th year celebration, so 2 years ago, 50th year of expansion, I think I was down there 8 times.
No kidding.
Yeah, during the year.
Wow.
They brought me in 8 different times.
Wow. So the pride of just association
Huge.
With that team.
Huge. You know, when I played for Boston for almost 4 years and had a real good run there and went to the finals and the conference finals 3 times, I'm a Flyer. Yeah. I played for Washington Capitals for 2 years at the end of my career. Yeah, I'm a Flyer.
Well, that's funny. I assume that everybody who plays for multiple teams, professional sports, if you, maybe not publicly.
You associate with one team.
But but in their hearts, they know what they are.
Yeah.
And you know what you are. Okay, so what's Mitch Marner going to be?
He's going to be a Maple Leaf. He is going to be a Maple Leaf. It's just a really, really challenging situation in the Athletic today, the Craig Custance article.
Really good piece on the whole FA
really
market.
Good.
Yeah.
But we've talked about it all summer. And all points that we had made at various times during the summer on how challenging this is. And Dave, this really goes back to 2007 when Edmonton signed Dustin Penner to the offer sheet coming out of the entry-level deal.
Yep.
And there's so many complications in the salary cap world, in the CBA. But the basic tenure is you control a player for 7 years mm-hmm. in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
3 years of an entry-level contract. And then 4 years of graduated rights for the players. After a certain number of games, he gets arbitration rights, which virtually nobody on either side uses. And then up through 7 years until he has unrestricted free agency.
6 years before they used to get it in the old system at 31, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Used to be 31 years
yeah.
old. And so that was a big get for the players. And yet, Brian Burke, I was working in Anaheim at the time, and we had Dustin Penner. And his beef wasn't Dustin Penner and losing Dustin Penner. His beef was, this is going to set a market standard of giving up control way too early.
Mm-hmm.
And that has now escalated to the fact that literally after 2 years completed in the NHL, players are signing home run contracts.
Well, I was going to ask you, do you think people anticipated this at all? Like when the salary cap system came in? Because I can see where from the National Hockey League's head offices, they're like, we don't care how the money gets distributed. All we want to make sure is that teams can't spend 1 cent more than X, right? So that we can give our owners cost certainty and we know exactly we can build our franchise values off of that. But at the same time, I mean, we all remember guys used to come out of their entry-level deal, and then they'd get a nice step up.
Mm-hmm.
But the home run contract was never something a guy got at age 21.
Absolutely not. What changed it more than anything was Eric Lindros.
Yeah.
Eric Lindros got the home run contract
right.
before he played a game in the NHL.
Right. That was brought in the rookie cap, right? That and Day,
well,
correct?
Yeah, because I was part of that group, and the lockout of 94-95
right.
was my final year in the NHL. And Bob Goodnow had come in, and Bob said, look, Eric Lindros coming in and being the highest paid player was the best thing that ever happened. Now, I'm looking around at a room with Mark Messier and Wayne Gretzky and thinking, Mario Lemieux, and thinking, some pretty good players in this room. He's going to make more than any of them
mm-hmm.
before he signs a contract mm-hmm. or scores a goal in the NHL. And yet, Bob Goodnow was exactly right, because that did float the boat.
Right.
I mean, they all walked in 5 minutes later and got immediate raises.
Well, that's the flip side of what happened when, it's funny, because we just passed another of these Gretzky trade anniversaries last week. That when Gretzky was making $1 million a year in Edmonton, mm-hmm. right? No one can justify that they should right. make more than Wayne Gretzky. And he had, 20-year contract or something
right.
like that, right? So he gets traded to L.A., McNall tears the deal up, and all of a sudden, everybody floats with him over the next 5 years. Right,
right. And that was
he's the ceiling. Yeah.
You know, and then Eric came in shortly after,
sure.
and then it got elevated
right.
again.
Right.
And so he's very right in that group. And this group of incredibly talented young kids is unique.
Mm-hmm.
We might not have a group like this.
Yeah, it's a staggering list of guys that are not only just unsigned, that where there seems to be no movement, no discussions.
And they're really good.
They're
really good.
Franchise-changing players.
To a man, they're yeah. really good. And they're very important to their own franchises, each one of them. And they're unique. There's a full smorgasbord. I'd love to put them together as a team. You'd have a really good team.
You have a great team. Yeah.
Really good team.
Call them the young stars.
Yeah, I'm thinking there's not a goalie in that group yet, because goalies don't emerge that
right.
young, but this is unique, and yet they've earned the money. Have they earned the money? I don't know if they've earned the money, but they've earned big contracts. And each team with its own structure has their own set of challenges. And, you know, everybody says, well, I can't believe there's a chain on my Twitter feed, on my mentions. It's been going on since last Wednesday when Hayes and I talked about Marner and Matthews. And what it's become is people comparing Marner and Matthews, which mm-hmm. wasn't our intent at all.
Right.
But they're comparing them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's Marner camp and there's Matthews camp. And obviously he's going to walk in the same locker room and sit somewhere around in that stall and they'll see what happens. But Calgary has the same issue with Matthew Tkachuk
because mm-hmm.
he's going to walk in with Gaudreau and Monahan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and Patrick Laine is sitting right beside Kyle Connor. They're both rookies. Very different players, very successful players. interesting conversation about which one, you know, would be more comfortable for you. Some would take the riverboat gambler and the big goal scoring line, sure. and some would take the consistency of Kyle Connor. But then Braden Point has the MVP in the league, Kucherov.
Right.
The established Steven Stamkos.
But that internal structure is easier to fit
into. Internal structure is the key. It just is. And that's where Toronto has the challenge because, you know, this hometown discount doesn't exist. Don't tell me Mitch Marner is going to take less.
No.
And quite frankly, he already has because he didn't have B bonuses in his entry-level contract.
Right.
So he's already taken less through the entry-level deal because when he signed, you know, Lou Lamoriello said, we don't do B bonuses. And then when Austin Matthews came, he did get the B bonuses. And so he has made more money through the entry-level portion. Mitch Marner's saying, I've already taken my hometown discount. So it's fascinating, but every team is dealing with it. What do you think they're saying about Mikko Rantanen in his locker room? Well, not only is Nathan MacKinnon there, but Gabriel Landeskog is a pretty good player as well. And he's a winger.
So what price did the Leafs pay to avoid this with Austin Matthews?
You know, Austin Matthews Group did a tremendous job of getting this done. February 5th, I believe.
Yep.
Unbelievably quiet. Mm-hmm. No prelude, no anything. But by giving Austin Matthews the deal they did.
11.02 something.
11.634.
Okay.
And the 3-4 is his number.
Okay, yes.
Yeah. And at that point, it was the second highest contract to Connor McDavid's. That was one piece of the contract.
Right.
I think the piece that surprised everybody was the 5 years.
Yeah.
Because Connor McDavid's was 8 years.
Right.
So you had bought cost certainty for 8 years. The Leafs have it for 5 years with a very close number. And then the real wrinkle was 93% of it being in signing
bonus. Up front, yeah, which is the Leafs' might being brought.
It is their might. It's their ability. And, you know, they're a big market team and the revenues are flow and they have the capacity to do that. And that's great. But if I'm the next guy in the Leaf locker room, I'm like, I got 93% of his. You know, he will receive so much signing bonus that he will actually have to give money back to the team if escrow is clawed back.
Just through signing bonus. Does that insulate him for a lockout?
It insulates him for a lockout.
Right.
It has significant tax ramifications.
Right. Because you're right. Your signing bonus is taxed at a different rate.
Well, it's taxed at a different rate, Dave, but he also, as an American citizen, files in both countries. So I have both passports. I have to file in both countries.
Okay.
So he counts his days in the U.S., and because of the number of days he's in the U.S. over the summer, but also during the season.
Right, because the dates that you're on road trips.
Absolutely. Sure. If you go to New York to play the Rangers and you leave Thursday, that's a day in the U.S. You play Friday. You don't get home till after midnight Friday night. That's 3 days in the U.S. on your tax counter. Yeah. And so he is taxed at a much, much more favorable rate on that signing bonus. So it wins in every sense that you can win. And so all Marner's saying is, I need some of that love. I need, you know. And now, you know, I don't like the comparison. It's inevitable of them as players. Oh, it's a center and it's a wing. All those things come into play. Of course they do. But really, with those three key components, the length of the contract, the significant dollar amount of the contract, and the percentage of signing bonus, that's the sticking point. I think term is as big a conversation point right now in that room as dollars is.
So here in the middle of August, what's Kyle Dubas thinking?
I have to get this done. More pressure on the team right now.
Way more.
Yeah, absolutely. And everyone assumes that the rest of the Leafs roster is filled out because Trevor Moore has moved up on the depth chart or Mikhaev has come in. Well, who knows if it's filled out? You know, yes, Jason Spezza has penciled in as the fourth line center. And you know, you have components on defense, maybe Ben Harper. How is that going to work out? You know, it might be a Liljegren or Sandin. It might be one of those kids. But you don't know what else you can do around it until you get that piece of cost certainty. It's really tough right now. I mean, it's tough on all these GMs. And this is normally they're just getting back into it now because they have to take some time to breathe in the summer, too. They have to.
Well, it's everybody figures Marner's going to go first, right? Everyone's standing back. If you're a player, you're waiting for that one to see what the RFA ceiling is.
And because of that, someone else is going to jump. Someone else is going to get an offer they're comfortable with, and they're going to jump. and they're going to sign.
Are you hoping, if you're Dubas, that that happens?
Probably, although I don't think it affects you very much.
Yes. Well, you say you know, your internal structure, unique situation. What happened to those? What happened to those offer sheets?
Well, you know, the Montreal one, and you and I haven't chatted since the Montreal one, and Mark Bergevin actually took grief on that one, and I don't agree with the grief, and here's why. Because you talk about internal structure, in tendering that offer sheet, he stayed within his own internal structure.
Sure.
If Sebastian Aho had signed that offer sheet and walked into the Montreal locker room making more than Carey Price,
yeah,
that's not working. But it wouldn't have upset the apple cart in that locker room. And the reason, and John Sedgwick is there as his cap guy, who also worked at the league as Brandon Pridham did. These are really, really the top cap guys in the business. And so I would think John Sedgwick's advice would have been make a run at it on our terms. Because you stayed below 8.5, you were only giving up a first, a second, and a third. You kept the salary structure within what will be comfortable in our locker room. And the two reasons we may get him is because Carolina's going to hate the five-year term.
Right.
And they're going to hate the signing bonus structure, the cash up front structure.
Right. Another
$22 million of that was due in the first calendar year. So that's a huge, huge factor for a team that doesn't have a revenue source coming in ahead of time.
We got to take a break in a moment. But do you think that, it's funny, every time the CBA gets done and they lock one of these things down, right? Mm-hmm. Teams find a way to use, which is their job. You know, what advantage do we have that doesn't violate the CBA that we can use? And obviously one of these is paying a huge portion of the contract through signing bonus because, they say, it's advantageous to the player.
Never mind. The NBA locked that down.
Do you think the NHL is going to lock it down next time?
Yes, I do. The NBA did lock it down.
Okay, so there you go.
They've locked it down.
So Leaf fans enjoy that advantage.
And the other factor, and real quick, the other factor, I thought they would look, that the teams would look for shorter-term contracts. They wouldn't want to go to 8 years anymore. And yet the players are getting there before the teams do.
Yeah.
The players are getting there before the teams do because, you know,
they want freedom.
They want freedom, and they're looking at tremendous players like Mark Scheifele and Nathan MacKinnon a couple years into a multi-year deal, blowing by them.
Yeah.
And blowing by them by significant amounts. One thing to blow by Nate MacKinnon if you're Austin Matthews.
Yeah.
Another thing to come close to doubling.
Yeah, it's remarkable how much
crazy
the salaries have grown. As you say, just the excellence of the players this young, this early in their careers.
There might not be another RFA class like this for 10 years.
Yeah, no, it's a bit remarkable one, and lots to watch between now and the opening of the regular season. Which now about 6 weeks away? Seems weird to say that.
Here we go.
Speaking of opening regular seasons, the NFL season is about a month away. It's week two of the preseason. Tim Graham of The Athletic is going to join us. He covers the Bills. He's from Cleveland. We can talk about both those teams with him. We'll do that and more coming up on this edition. You're listening to Overdrive on TSN 1050, watching on TSN 4. You're listening to Overdrive. I'm Dave Naylor, filling in for Brian Hayes, who is off for a little while longer. Dave Poulin, NHL analyst, former NHL player.
Baseball guy in the summer.
Baseball guy in the summer, Leaf management. If I had to recite your resume, we'd be here, we'd fill out the rest of the hour. I'm going to segue here for a second. There is one aspect of your resume I had no clue about until about 5 minutes before we went to air today, that you worked with the National Football League Players Association.
I did for almost nine months.
And tell us what you did.
Yeah, so in a nutshell, when I left Notre Dame, I was...
You were a head hockey coach at Notre Dame.
I was. Yeah. I was a head hockey coach, then I was an administrator for a couple of years, and we built a new building there, and I was always going to try something else. So a buddy of mine had a search firm, an executive search firm in Chicago, and I played golf with him a lot. He's a Notre Dame guy, and I said, you know, you do this for a living, put people in places. Where would I fit? And he kept saying, come work for me. I said, what do you do? I don't know. I don't know anything about executive search. And I ended up taking a position with his firm, and the first search I won was the executive director of the NHLPA. And, you know, I went to the executive board, and we presented, and we won the search, and we put Paul Kelly in place in 2007. And one of the candidates in that search was Richard Bertelstein, who was number two at the NFLPA.
Mm-hmm.
And that list of candidates for the NHLPA was a tremendous group of guys who I've kept in touch with a number of them here in the Toronto area and watched what they've done over the past 10 years. And then in 2008, the summer of 2008, very unexpectedly, Gene Upshaw passed away.
Right.
And Richard Bertelstein called me and he said, could you help me get the players organized and I'll make sure your firm gets a look? So So I helped him organize the players at that point. They had an executive committee of 11. And then we went up against the biggest search firms in the country, the Spencer Stewart, Heidrick & Struggles, Korn Ferry, and we won that search. And I was the point person on that search. And fascinating for literally close through February, March, the player meetings in Hawaii is when they elected Demora Smith as the head of the NFLPA, and he's still there to this day. And he was sourced through a lawyer friend of mine in Chicago who knew him personally, and he came out of nowhere. The first time that we presented to the players face-to-face, it was in Dallas. There were 11 persons on the executive committee, and I remember, and D. Smith is a diminutive guy, right? 5'8".
Mm-hmm. So, I've seen him speak. I've been in the room when he's
very dynamic.
He can command a room.
So the first, we were down to 10 candidates, and it was an hour and a half presentation with no questions. So you had to present for an hour and a half. And he presented, and some of the guys on that executive committee, Kevin Mawai, who just went into the Hall of Fame, Kevin Carter, you know, huge big man. Jeff Saturday was in there. Drew Brees was in there. Mike Vrabel was in there. And so D presented for the very first time, and he stood up and he walked out, an hour and a half, spectacular presentation. And there was silence in the room. And Jeff Saturday said, "Some guys play bigger than they are," just like that. So that was the player's introduction to D. Smith. Fascinating to see the differences in the leagues, and really cool experience.
I got to admit, when I walked in here to host the show with you today, I did not expect to learn that you were a big part of putting Demora Smith in place as executive.
Very proudly too, because he's still there, literally 10 years later.
Yeah, and he may be for a while. Tim Graham, NFL writer with The Athletic, and a frequent guest on the station, a frequent co-host of mine in the days that I used to occupy the studio in the 4 to 7 hours. Tim, welcome back to TSN 1050. How you doing?
Thanks for having me on. Anytime, and you know that. I love doing it.
Excellent, excellent. So, with the Buffalo Bills, it feels like every year we are asking, is this the year that something breaks out of the ordinary? Is this the year that something breaks out of the ordinary?
Before I answer the question, I want to apologize for any background noise. I'm at a hotel in Charlotte right now where the Bills play the Panthers tomorrow night. Mm-hmm. And I tried to step outside to get some quiet, and I would melt. So I'm back in the air conditioning.
Okay, we got you.
It is no joke here. So, yeah, you might get a little lobby music coming through the speaker. But it's this could be the year, yeah. And I'm encouraged by what I've seen so far, both on paper and in the practices. They just finished up two joint practices against the Carolina Panthers, going up against Cam Newton every day, I think can only help a team figure out where it is and what it has. And the defense, I mean, this is a division-winning caliber defense that the Bills have. And unfortunately, they happen to be in the same division as Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. And, you know, it's funny, just total anecdote. I'm doing some research for a baseball story and just came across a stat from 1961. The Detroit Tigers won 101 games that year, but the pennant race was over in late August because they were finished 8 games behind the Yankees, who won 109 games. So that's kind of like what the AFC East has been up against. You can put together a really good team in that division for going on 19 years and still have such a minimal shot. One of my favorite stats, by the way, about the Patriots is that since Tom Brady became the quarterback, the Patriots have never not had the best record in the AFC East. They've lost the division twice on tiebreakers. One time they were 11-5 and lost on the tiebreaker to those Wildcat Miami Dolphins that took the NFL by storm. So, you know, it's one of the surest bets in football for almost 2 decades that the Patriots are going to win the division. That puts the Bills in a position where Josh Allen is going to really have to take a big leap. And if he cannot lose games, or if that offense, which has so many added compliments around Josh Allen with guys like John Brown and Cole Beasley at receiver, the entire offensive line has been revamped, adding Frank Gore to help stabilize the backfield, and also drafting Devin Singletary, who a lot of people think could be a special player in the NFL. Josh Allen doesn't have any excuses, and if he can make a next step and play presentably on a weekly basis, the defense is good enough that the Bills could get into the playoffs this year. And I think that it's just tough to consider when you're thinking when you haven't even played a down yet and you're probably already gunning for one of two wild card spots.
Tim, you mentioned the joint practice going on right now with Carolina, and you look at that four-game exhibition season, and I know there's been a lot of conversation or talk from the league about two more league games and potentially, you know, shortening the exhibition season to two games. With things like control practices, joint practices, do you think that's something that could happen?
I love the idea, which I just happened to come up with, I believe, on the air one day. We were spitballing with Dave. I was a guest on one day. I'd never thought of it before. It just popped into my head. We were talking about four-game schedules. And not every team does hold joint practices like the Bills and the Panthers are doing. The Bills also have gone up against the Steelers before. You know, you see it all over the NFL. A couple of teams get together. But what if the NFL were just to mandate or do a rolling schedule where you go and practice with somebody else? And, you know, the facilities today in the NFL can accommodate this. It's not like we're dealing with, you know, decrepit stadiums or facilities that can't handle another team coming in. But I would like to see the preseason schedule reduced to two games, regardless of whether the schedule goes to 16 or 18 games. But as you guys know, this is a big money grab. And the way that the NFL does it is the preseason games are up to each individual team. They're not part of the broadcasting deal. So it's 32 teams have the ability to strike their own individual broadcasting rights. Say, you know, this is where the Dallas Cowboys get to flex their muscle. A rare, you know, in the revenue sharing NFL, a rare opportunity for the powers that the powerful teams in the league to go out and flex their muscle and just to make money that they don't have to share with everybody else. So if you're the Dallas Cowboys or the New York Giants or Washington, you know, all the most influential owners in the league, the New England Patriots, they don't want the preseason to go away because it's easy money. So that's what I think. It makes so much sense. I mean, we look at it even as fans, and these games are ridiculous, and you don't really learn a ton about these guys. The fourth preseason games have been turned into such jokes that teams over the last 4 or 5 years have been signing quarterbacks off the street just to play in the last game because they don't want to get their quarterbacks hurt. They've already decided the competition. You don't want to put a quarterback out there with fourth string fringe guys trying to make the team because they're not as crisp at running their routes. So those quarterbacks aren't going to get anything out of it. Your scouts don't get anything out of it because the competition doesn't allow a player to show what he can do with all the different, you know, lesser thans on the field. And that's that. So why even bother playing that game if you're going to be signing, I don't know, whoever it was, Jordan Palmer off, you know, guy who hasn't played all summer. Let's just bring him in to play a game and then cut him the next day. I mean, that's the folly of these preseason games.
Well, it's funny because the NFL used to cut down, right, through the course of training camp. And now they essentially have one cut down day, right, where they go from 90 to 53 in September. And I assume that's so that they can keep guys around that they know they're going to cut to play in these preseason games.
That's a big part of it. You're absolutely right, Dave. I mean, hey, we need cannon fodder so we can finish out this four-game schedule that Dallas has with its local ABC affiliate. I'm just pulling out an example. I don't even know if that's the case. But they have a special deal with their TV partner in Dallas. The Giants have it with a station in New York, you know, the Rams and all these big markets. They just go out to, they get to say, all right, we're going to sell you four games here that is not part of the CBS, Fox, ESPN package. We get to and just make a ton of money, and the box office aspect of it too. They force their fans to, when they buy season tickets, you're not buying 16, you're buying 18 games. The preseason games are included in a season ticket deal at the same price that you would have to pay for a regular season game. So it's a hostage situation if you want to be a Green Bay Packers season ticket holder, and everybody knows how long that list is. You see about it. You see it every year that it goes on. You're going to have to, because people hold on to them within their families. They can pass them down in their wills. You got to buy those two preseason games too that you're not going to go to.
Tim, I always think of you as the patron saint of bad football because you cover the Bills and you're from Cleveland.
That's right.
That could be
also,
changing.
Anytime I've covered college football, it's been awful, too. I covered an 0-10 or an 0-11 UNLV team when I was living in Las Vegas.
Okay, so if you've got a football
it's not
team,
been good.
You don't want Tim Graham covering them. All right, so I'm not going to ask you if this is the year in the Browns. What I want to know is from the people you know in Cleveland, you know, friends and family, is there actually hope in Cleveland? Or has the years and years and years of what's occurred made people resistant to sort of rise up until they actually see more reason to do so this season?
You're asking me at the perfect time. Just over this past weekend, I went back to Ohio at a family event in which I was asked probably no fewer than 12 times what I think the Browns are going to do this year. And based on that, I think, you know, people are really pumped up to see. It's a curiosity. They are not, they don't seem to be as ingrained with losing like Bills fans do. Like you talk about, like this interview started off, is this going to be the years the Bills make the playoffs? There's this, we've been conditioned because we haven't seen it in so long that we can't imagine it. So even if you're talking from a purely analytical standpoint or you're trying to be as objective as you can, those biases creep into your head, even as a reporter. Like when it comes time for The Athletic, if they ask me to do a preseason or a season prediction for what the Bills' record's going to be, I always have a tendency to dial it back a game. Like I come up with what I think it might be, and I'm like, but I just can't imagine it. I haven't seen it. It's like a fantasy. And the Bills fan or Browns fans are that, but they're willing to buy in. They love Baker Mayfield can do no wrong. Do not dare try to criticize Baker Mayfield at all, or you will end up with a racetrack around your eye. It is they love what's going on there. They've made all the high profile moves, so they are buying in all in. There's no doubt that the Browns are going to win the division, at least from the Graham family's perspective. And I like to think my relatives are pretty reasonable and smart. They're ready to go. They're ready for Odell Beckham, and they're ready for this defense and all the different additions, Nick Chubb and all these. Everybody's a superstar in their eyes, but it's been a long time. They don't really know what this looks like.
Yeah, it has been a while. I often say that not only do the Browns lose, but they usually put their fans out of the misery by Canadian Thanksgiving.
Well, that's the one thing I kept saying to them. They're like, how can they be beat? And I was like, you know what? You look at them on paper and they can't, but all it takes is a fist fight in the locker room, Baker Mayfield tearing his ACL, some sort of crisis. You know, Freddie Kitchens has never been a head coach before. You have to manage all these personalities. There are pitfalls all throughout. You can step on landmines all over the place, and sometimes even especially more so when you have so many big egos and alpha males on your team that expect great things. So they're coming to Cleveland. They expect great things. They're borderline taking it for granted that it's going to happen. And if things go sideways for a game or two, it'll be interesting to see how that team reacts.
Great expectations in Cleveland. Thanks for this, Tim.
All right, Dave. Take care.
All right, there he is, Tim Graham of The Athletic. I always joke about, you know, the...
Well, it's just great the hesitation as soon as you started to bring it up.
Oh, yeah.
Baker Mayfield is a difference maker, though. And he's a little bit older, too.
Yeah.
It wasn't smooth. I mean, he walked on at Texas Tech.
And then
it's a crazy story.
At Oklahoma, he takes the number one job. I mean, he has beat the odds. And I guess if there's anywhere in football you really have to beat the odds, it would be Cleveland, right?
But he's a little bit older. He's 24 years old. It's not, you know, he's not a 20-year-old or 21-year-old coming in like a true, potentially coming out.
And a lot of those guys come out. After a red shirt year, 3 years, basically after high school, right?
Yeah, but he does have something about him.
He does indeed. We'll see if he can make that translate for the Browns this year. Scott Mitchell, our TSN 1050 Blue Jays reporter, will join us in studio after 5 o'clock. Up next, it's Sound Wars. It's the Yes Guy, No Guy bracket, round number 2. We'll get to that. You're listening to Overdrive on TSN 1050 on the TSN app and watching on TSN 4.
This is TSN 1050's Sound Wars.
They did it, Naylor!
I'm so proud that they did it. Naylor has survived. Well, that was from the day of the Austin, well, not the Austin Matthews draft, but
that
the number one
legendary.
Selection. I was sitting right where you are. Hayes was sitting here, and he looked over at me and he said, They did it, Naylor.
They did it.
I still get
Naylor.
Hit with that on Twitter all the time.
I thought it was we did it, Naylor, no. But it was they did it, Naylor.
But the Leafs got the number one pick.
He says that's what he gets asked about more than any other thing that he's ever uttered in the radio world.
All right, it's Sound Wars. We are in the yes guy, no guy bracket, round number two. Oh, this is a good battle, and this one features both of these clips are from the Overdrive boys. Let's listen to Shannon for the road.
Paul Maurice was like, I'm so mad, but I want to watch a movie. Does anybody have any movies? And I put up my hand. I'm like, I do, but you have to stop the bus on the side of the highway. We stopped the bus. I grab my bag, and I've got like Shannon Tweed softcore porn movies. And they fire one in, and he's like, he is so mad that that's why we stopped the bus.
Shannon Tweed. Shannon Tweed, who, by the way, starred in the very first restricted movie I ever saw. I think I was 17, and it was Hot Dog, the movie.
Just restricted?
It was just restricted.
Because when we're done Sound Wars, I want to get into this a little bit.
And yeah, it was
more hot, from a coaching standpoint.
It was a ski movie.
Of course it was.
But I think she was featured in a hot tub scene in that, if I remember correctly, from my teen years. Okay, number two, Parade Diapers, goes up against Shannon for the Road. Here is Parade Diapers.
Could you imagine if you ate Taco Bell and you're in the middle of that group?
Oh, my God. Could you imagine, like, an emergency exit? Like, they have to fly a helicopter in because some guy's boiler exploded.
You got to lower the guy down in the yellow stretcher.
To pick him up.
Like, airlift him up. Yeah.
Airlift him up.
Like he's at the top.
Stretcher.
Like he's at the top of Mount Everest.
Take him to a rooftop at the Doubletree there so we can have a moose.
Nothing like a little bathroom humor in the middle of a championship parade. Now it's up to you to vote on your favorite. Go to tsn1050.ca and decide which clip is moving on, Shannon for the Road or Parade Diapers. It was funny. I was listening to Overdrive the day of the parade because I was coming back from Penn State. We were down there, one of those camps where they got like 500 prospects that are
right.
Everybody from no-hopers to guys that are actually going to play for Penn State. And we were driving back, and it was actually an interesting way to follow the parade because we're listening to the show and listening to the boys down amongst it all, as you just heard, and looking at the images on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when people were talking about the guys who climbed up on the thing at City Hall. And,
really
and
remarkable day.
Oh, it just, I mean, I'm sorry I wasn't there, but I'm not, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I was fine not being there.
Yeah.
And I was in Toronto.
And it was hot, right?
But let's go back to the first one because Paul Maurice, as a coach, has to know his players better. I coached for 10 years at the NCAA Division I level. I sat in the first seat on the left getting on the bus. This is right where the coach said. If a player like O-Dog says he has a movie, stop the bus, end the conversation right there.
Right there.
Right there. You got to know your players better than that.
Shannon Tweed was married or is married to Gene Simmons?
I believe it was.
Yeah.
I'm not going to end it, but...
And I don't want to sound like I'm as big a Shannon Tweed groupie as O is, but I believe she's from the province of Newfoundland. Am I correct about that?
I was going West Coast. I was going Vancouver.
We'll get to Wikipedia in the break. Dave Poulin is my co-host. I'm Dave Naylor sitting in for Brian Hayes. Coming up, Scott Mitchell, TSN 1050, Jays reporter, will join us. You're listening to Overdrive on TSN 1050, streaming online and watching on TSN 4.